Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m., Mondays at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com, and we also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. Lots of opportunities for you to hear the program, re-listen to it, download it if you'd like, and also click on the link to our guest's website so that you can get more information beyond the interview. And also a reminder that some of these interviews are a lot longer than you might think. It's kind of like that little sign on your side view mirror that says that things in this mirror appear larger or closer than they really are, or farther, whatever the case may be. Well, these programs sometimes are longer than they may appear to be. So we encourage you to go to the website, richarddugan.com, and get more information both about us as well as about our guests, again, through the link. We consider ourselves a portal to all these websites. We don't reinvent the wheel. Well, we're going to be talking, I think, it's going to be a lot of fun, I think, to talk about this subject and the particular material that we have available for you today, having to do with what if you discovered, not as a concept, but rather as a profound inner knowing born from the crucible of your own experience, that the essence of your very nature is, as and has always been and always will be, the presence of love. We're going to be talking with the authors of the book, Remember the Light Within, A Course in Self-Centered Living. They are a couple, Mary and Ron Hulnick, PhD. They both have PhDs. And I want to welcome you and thank you both for joining us on the program.
Excited to be with you.
We really are.
It's great to have you on the program and to talk about this subject, because one of the comments that I remember getting from one of my guests some time ago when we were, you know, I asked in terms of man's evolution, you know, I mean, where are we headed and what are we going to do and how are we going to find that that new place in the universe for us as human beings? And I kind of posed the question as to, you know, will we get to the place where we will, you know, finally know who we are? And the response that came back to me, I thought, was rather profound. They said, no, we're not going to remember who we are. We're going to remember who we have always been.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where you're coming from, isn't it?
Yes, it really is.
Yes,
it's very well said.
It's exactly where we're coming from. It is the process of remembering, of waking up into the awareness of the love that we are and living our lives in accordance with that awareness. And it is a radical transformation and a radical change in perspective.
You know, most people don't realize this, but there never has been a time in human history that has been as peaceful as it is now, if you look at that on a per capita basis over time.
Well, some you do know that some people would take umbrage with that a little bit.
Well, I know.
We do know that. That's actually the studies that Steven Pinker quotes in his book, The Angels of Our Better Nature. I was shocked when I read it myself.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating to me, and I'm just curious as to how and why the two of you in particularly came upon this, because I suppose that we could read in what I like to refer to as the ancient wisdom teachings that have come down through the ages, and they go by many different names, that maybe this has always been there, but for some reason or another, the masses just either haven't, they didn't get it, or it wasn't given to them as far as information and or knowledge, and that it's kind of like at the age of 17, I began what I refer to as my search, and from that point forward, it's never ended. And when I was working for the A Christian radio station back in Phoenix, Arizona, I remember sharing this with one of the ministers or what have you, and they said, oh, well, no, once you find Jesus, your search is over. And I said, no, not exactly. It's like, once I find Jesus, my search has just begun.
Yes, yes, because that really, you know, it's incredible that the information, I think, has always been available, but we don't necessarily have the ears to hear it or the eyes to see it because of the conditioning, because of the fact that we have an ego that is focused on the duality, on five sense material reality. And so one must turn inward in order to ask some of those deeper questions that it sounds like you've been asking all your life. Well, who am I? Why am I here? What is my purpose? How can I have a life of meaning and fulfillment? And does any of this really make any difference at all?
Yeah.
And the place that that we start from is the recognition, that we are really living in two realities at the same time. Two realities at the same time. We're living in the world of the physical world reality, which is the world that most people are focused into. But then there's a whole other reality going on that we refer to as the spiritual reality. And you can get an experiential sense of that once you realize that we base our lives on what is happening out there, that things happen out there, and we make the assumption, which turns out to be not true at all, that it's what's going on out there that determines what's going on inside of ourselves. But experience, that which we actually live, is not going on out there, it's going on inside. And what we experience inside, we have found over many years of doing this work, is not necessarily a function of what's going on out there. It's a function, largely, of what we choose to have going on inside. It's really quite independent of it. And that is a radical transformation that that most people don't make. Someone said very recently, we've gone into a movie and we've gotten lost in the picture.
Uh-huh. Kind of like a lot of some of the movies like Matrix. Where,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a very good example.
And Ron, you actually, it was interesting because you said we live in two different worlds. And I don't know if you caught the irony or not, you said it twice.
Well, that makes it twice as good.
Absolutely. This whole aspect is, and it's really interesting because yet I have been taught over the years that what you've just, the way you've just stated it in terms of what's going on externally, as you put it, is independent of what's going on internally. And yet I've been hearing that, what's happening on the outside is a reflection of what's going on the inner world of people. And when you have all kinds of turmoil, it means that there are a lot of people who are in turmoil internally, spiritually, and so forth. And they're reflecting that out into the world. And that's why we're having this and that and the other thing. And you're actually saying, in essence, the opposite of that, that our inner life is not influencing, in that respect, the outer world. Am I understanding you correctly?
Not quite.
Not quite, okay.
See, we spiritually speaking, we create that which we need to experience in order to learn and grow more toward the loving awareness of what we are. And so every time we let go of one, let's call it a negative thing inside, then the quality of our outer experience reflects that. So that's very, very accurate. But what we're saying is that when we pair the two up and we say that our inner experience is caused by what's going on outside, then we have assigned ourselves to a relatively helpless role, because who can really affect the sum total of what's going on outside? And that isn't the way our psyche. Psyche really means soul. I don't know if most people understand that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the word means.
Yeah.
Psychology really should be the study and practice of soul essence, but it's gotten kind of hijacked into mind and behavior.
Yeah. I, as a matter of fact, I took college, I went to junior college in Phoenix, and I took a psychology course. I didn't do real well grade-wise, but it was fascinating to me to hear all of the different perspectives on the soul, if you will, in this context, or on the mind and behavior, in terms of the different schools of thought, you know. And I just, it's like I realize that each person is different, and we all come from a different a different frame of reference, and that's why we have these different points of view as far as the psychological or even psychiatric, for that matter, views of the human being. And it's like, well, actually, it's not so much different. It's just different pieces of the same puzzle.
Well, and part of the way we look at it is that each person who is born onto the earth comes with their own spiritual curriculum. So they come with the issues they came to resolve, the things they came to learn, and also with the unique giftedness of who they are that they also came to share, and that the process of awakening can be accelerated through this awareness and through learning how to use our unresolved issues really as stepping stones in our spiritual awakening. And part of how we approach this, and we talk about this in the book, is through the process of recognizing that we can experience authentic empowerment by taking responsibility for our internal environment and for the reactions that we have to people and situations or circumstances in our lives. And by taking responsibility for it, we don't mean blaming ourselves and condemning ourselves. We mean that there's an opportunity for compassion and for healing inside.
Mm.
And through that process of healing, people let go of the barriers that block them from the awareness of the love that they are, and they spend more time residing in what we refer to the authentic self, which is beyond physical world, five-sense duality. There's no duality there. All that we find really is the experience of love, peace, joy, creativity, wisdom. It's an extraordinary state of consciousness. And the thing about it, it is our essential essence. We all have it inside ourselves.
You know, it's interesting. I'll ask you this question in regards to both self as well as others. That what would you say to someone who has come to a place in their lives and either in spite of or because of what they experienced in school, on the playground and so forth, in terms of, let's say, being bullied and so forth, that now in their adult years, they are basically really trying to avoid and prevent drama and conflict in their lives and the lives of the people around them. And again, not out of fear, but just out of a sense of the world would be such a nicer place if people would just be nice to one another and again, love one another and share that, if you will, that light that resides in each one of us. Would you say that that person is on the right track, or maybe they're not being honest with themselves because in this world you can't have a life without drama and conflict?
It's not so much that you can't have a life without drama and conflict. You can't have a life without disturbance unless you're a very, very, very high realized being, because it's that very disturbance that is the curriculum that you are here to resolve. Let me give you an example of what I mean. One of the things that we stress a lot at USM, University of Santa Monica, which is where we operate from, prevalent on the planet is the philosophy of I am upset because. And we see that certainly in individual relationships and couples relationships, and at its if you keep expanding that out, that's what war is. It's a bunch of people saying, we're upset, and it's your fault. And if we just change you or kill you or whatever, mm-hmm. then everything will be fine. At USM, people aren't allowed that option of I'm upset because. What you want to do is you want to learn how to access the part inside of you that is upset, regardless of what it's blaming it on, and heal it. Once you have accomplished that, and that's not easy, then that thing that used to upset you no longer does anymore. You just deal with it. So it's the, we call that the healing of unresolved issues. It's the healing of unresolved issues that determines the degree to which a person will be able to live their life in peace.
What I would add to that, Richard, is that in the case, in the example that you gave of someone who was bullied and had that experience going through the lower grades or middle school or maybe even high school, whether or not it's going to be, each case is individual. If somebody is really at peace with that, in other words, they have done the inner work to really heal the hurt of those experiences, to release the judgments they placed against themselves, the other people, maybe some of the authority figures around them who they felt didn't help them. If they've been able to do the inner work to make peace with that, and then they, their intention is to walk through life in a way that is respectful and honoring of themselves and other people, then we'd say they have used that experience for their growth, learning, and upliftment. But if they are conflict avoidant and they have become a peace at any price kind of personality, then there's still opportunity for work, to, for inner work to be done. And our point of view is if we're still alive and in a body, there's still opportunity.
And yet, this work that you talk about, this transformation, and of course, this is part of what you folks do at the University of Santa Monica under the guise of spiritual psychology as being the founders, founding facilitators and co-directors thereof. This can be, because I've been through several different personal growth and development programs in the 80s and 90s. And in some ways, well, I can honestly say that it can be really hard and it can feel very, very painful to the point where, I really don't want to be here doing this. And by the way, I said that in one of these programs to which they said to me, well, if you didn't want to be here, you wouldn't be, but you are here. Ergo, this is where you want to be.
Well, you know, what you're saying is accurate. This work is not for the faint of heart. It will bring up the resistance of the ego because the ego likes comfort, security. It likes the feeling of being in control. And the ego doesn't really necessarily want us to wake up into the awareness of our authentic self. Because the ego likes to think it's in charge and it's in control. Mm. But, you know, we have the way we work with people is very supportive. And there, because the work goes on over time, the people who are participating become a community. And the USM community has about 5,500 graduates in it to date. And I must say our community is characterized by love, by support, by authenticity, and people still work their process. They're still dealing with life and the issues that are surfaced through life experience. But I think we gain familiarity with the process. We learn how to work with what comes forward. There are two principles of spiritual psychology that I think are just incredible, Richard. One of them is how you relate to the issue is the issue, or how you relate to yourself while you go through the issue is the issue. And this one really speaks to, we have a choice. We can be in judgment, combination, condemnation, resistance, making ourselves wrong, actually exacerbating things by creating more drama around what we're experiencing, or we can relate with ourselves in a compassionate way. We can learn how to forgive ourselves for our judgments such that these issues resolve and dissolve. There's another principle that I wanted to mention, and that is that healing is the application of loving to the parts inside that hurt. And don't need to continue suffering. Suffering is really optional. Yes, as human beings, we suffer. But the more we wake up into who we are and the more we recognize the nature of the reasons why we're here in the first place, and we get to work doing the work that we came to the planet to do, the more graceful life becomes. And there is something extraordinary about being part of a community of people who are doing this kind of work. Mm.
Well, I know that in the last 2 years, 2.5 years or so, obviously people in this country in particular have been struggling a great deal with the personas that are out there and the egos that they're living in. And I actually got sucked in. I didn't care for the longest time until about, I'd say August or September of 2016. And all of a sudden I got sucked in and I'm in the throes of conversation and debate and argument and this and that and the other. And it's only been recently that I finally was able to come out of that. And I came to this, I'm at this place now, and I don't know if that's necessarily a great place, but it's a heck of a lot better than where I was because I'm a whole lot less stressed. And that is, and it was very hard to say the very first time, I thank you for being the teacher that shows me the way I don't want to be, that I don't want to behave as. I am grateful for your lesson, and I'm going to continue to learn from it. And I have to say that that's the only, and of course, even in that, there's still judgment, you know, and I get that. But I figured it's a far better place than where I was.
Yes.
We would totally agree with that, and we would say that what you actually did was you let go of, or you gave up, or you surrendered part, at least, of the judgment that you had. It's like you can't fight. You see, if you fight out of anger, all you're doing is adding to the sum total of anger, even if you're fighting for peace.
Mm-hmm.
You're really accomplishing the exact opposite. So we tell people, you want to march, march. You want to hold up signs, hold up signs. You want to save the whales, save the whales. Just do it from a place of loving. You don't have to do it from a place of againstness and judgment.
Mm.
One of the other principles of spiritual psychology is that outer experience is a reflection of inner reality. And so the things that go on out there that disturb my peace are my opportunity for healing. And a couple of months ago, we wrote a blog called, what is it called, Ron?
The one about the election?
Yeah.
It was called, Are You Suffering from Post-Traumatic Election Distress?
My hand is up.
Yes. Well, so many hands were up, and some of them are still up,
yes.
And it's very, very understandable. But if we can recognize, oh, there's this situation, we don't like this situation, we may not be in agreement with this situation, but we aren't helping ourselves or the situation if we collapse into judgment and wrong-making, but rather we can work with the disturbance that it brings up inside of us, with the part of us that would do right-making and wrong-making. And this is challenging. But we can send you a copy of this blog if you want, Richard.
I would love to take a look at it. And again, it is something that regardless of what circumstances you're dealing with, whether it's on this national level or state or local, or just, you know, in your own life, in your family, your place of work, or even with issues you're just dealing with on a personal level, we really do need to come to, come to that place of peace. And I'm curious, and this is going back to what you were talking about earlier, Ron, so I'm going to ask you to maybe even expound even further in regard to the inner and outer worlds and their workings. It is often said post-election, and regardless of who is elected, we get the government that we vote for or that we deserve. We get the government we deserve. Would that apply, and would that kind of scenario, if you will, would that apply in a lot of different realms of our lives that we get that which we deserve? Or is it more we get the government in this context that we need to learn our lessons from, that we contracted to come in to learn from?
You could look at government as the representation of the sum consciousness of the people that are governed, because it's those people who voted to put those particular people in office. So there's no right or wrong or good or bad in any of it.
Mm-hmm.
In order to be able to assign such a righteousness to it, we would have to know what the spiritual curriculum is of all the people who are involved. And, of course, nobody knows that.
And of the country itself.
And of the country itself.
Yeah.
What we do know is that each person has the choice of how they want to use the opportunity that is presented in order to see what it is that they're against. And againstness is always going to have judgment in it,
mm-hmm.
and let go of the judgment. It doesn't say don't take action. It says if you take action out of judgment, you're only feeding the thing that you say that you want less of.
Mm.
So we're always going to find ourselves in situations where we... where something is going on, and then we have a response to it.
Yeah.
And this is one of the main psychological mechanisms that's known as projection.
Mm.
So the ego, because it doesn't want to take responsibility for its own disturbance, it will look outside and see that very same disturbance and project onto that and judge that and feel righteous in doing it. But that doesn't heal anything.
Right.
All that does is it adds to the sum total of the negativity on the planet.
Two things. One is karma. How does that play into this?
Karma would be another word for spiritual curriculum.
Okay. Interesting. Before we go to break, I want to let our listeners know again that we are talking today with Ron and Mary Hulnick, who both have PhDs. They also they are also the co-facilitators, the founding faculty and co-directors of the University of Santa Monica. And we encourage you to check out the website, universityofsantamonica.edu. That's universityofsantamonica.edu or usmonline.org. That's usmonline.org. And we're going to continue our conversation here with these two wonderful folks, this couple that has shared with us their perspectives and, of course, the work that they are involved in through the particular book that I have in my hand right now, Remembering the Light Within, A Course in Soul-Centered Living. We're going to talk more about that as we continue. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, and please stay tuned.
Tell me your story.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for staying with us here on the program as we continue talking with our very special guests, Mary and Ron Hulnick, PhDs. They run the University of Santa Monica, I assume down in Santa Monica, of course. And we're talking about Remembering the Light Within, A Course in Soul-Centered Living. And, of course, one of the slogans, if you will, that we have here on the program, Mary and Ron, is that... we want to, it's about new paradigms for a new world and trying to give people choices and knowledge of those choices to help make their dreams come true. But we're also looking for those new ways of living. And when I say new ways of living, I'm speaking of those ways that work. And when we look around today in our world, there are a lot of ways in which people are living that just aren't working. So you've labeled the subtitle, A Course in Soul-Centered Living, and we're not talking here about the vast number of philosophies, as I am using the term these days, that people have adopted, and we're talking about something far different, aren't we?
Yes, we really are. One of the things that that we tell people is the more that you involve yourself in this work, and the more that you grow or learn as a result of doing it, you will, for example, get a better job. And the reason you'll get a better job is that you will show up in the job differently. So even if it's the same job you have, it will be a better job. For the same reason, your relationships will improve, even if they're the same relationships that you're in, because you will show up differently in those relationships. And that holds for every area of your life.
And when we say this is a course in soul-centered living, we wrote the book as 26 chapters, and people can really read the book any way they want. But one of the ways that people can use this book is that they can read a chapter and then apply the practice at the end of that chapter for, say, 2 weeks, and then move on to the next chapter. And what can be very supportive, some people are getting together with a small group of acquaintances or friends who have a similar interest, and they're doing the book as a course over time together, because then they can talk about their experiences, they can talk about what they're learning, they can talk about the challenges that they have. And this is very, very supportive and empowering for people.
And if you do it that way, one chapter every 2 weeks, then it's like taking a course for a year.
Mm.
And believe me, I would be absolutely astonished if someone did this for one chapter for every 2 weeks for a year, and their life didn't change dramatically for the better.
I like the aspect of, and this is just my own personal thing, whenever I receive a copy of some materials, sometimes they will put the flyer in the front, just inside the front cover or business card, and sometimes they'll put it in the middle of the book somewhere, and I leave it there. And it just so happens that this is on... This is at the end of chapter 4, and there's a section here, of course, the chapter practice, then the heart-centered listening within yourself, and then there's an intention. And in this case, I'm listening with the ears of my heart, respectively, compassionately, with reverence and respect. I am attuning inside myself to K-L-O-V-E.
K-Love.
K-Love. We'll talk about that in a moment. And listening in the silence to the still, small voice within, which I also want to talk about in terms of our intuition as well. But what is this K-Love?
Well...
it's Mary's favorite channel.
Uh-oh.
You know, if you consider the possibilities that there are two channels inside, and one of them is K-Ego, which tends to be characterized by the duality, by right-wrong, by judgment... it often can be very harsh and critical. And K-Love, which is a nurturing, supportive, encouraging voice, that really is the distinction here. And that we have a choice inside ourselves as to what channel we're going to listen to. And learning to exercise that choice is one of the practices that can... change things radically. But people also need to, or at least in our view, they have the opportunity to learn, well, how am I going to let go of this judgmental, right-wrong way of relating to myself and what's going on in the world and the people around me? And part of it is by recognizing that judgment tends to create that terrible feeling of separation and aloneness that we can feel, and also the experience of unworthiness. And through learning compassionate self-forgiveness, not that we're forgiving ourselves for having done anything wrong, we're forgiving ourselves for forgetting who we are and entering into a judgmental, right-wrong way of being with ourselves and other people.
This is... perhaps the keynote of the whole process of doing this work, because for many of us, what we grew up learning was that forgiveness was making it somehow okay that someone did some terrible thing, but we're going to be bigger than that, and we're just going to forgive them. But we really haven't entered into true forgiveness because we're still making what they did wrong. We're just doing it at a more subtle level. So the forgiveness that truly lets go of the pain and the suffering is the forgiveness that says, I forgive myself for judging that happened as wrong. And I just, because I don't really know what's right or wrong in this world, those are just my perceptions and my value judgments. I have to assume, I don't have to, but we choose to assume that everything is serving spiritual purpose, meaning everything is there for us to learn and grow from, including all of the things that we maybe did and wish we hadn't done at the time. But that's not the hard part. The hard part is letting ourselves off the hook, so to speak, for the judgments. And this is really, if you think about it, this is the basic tenet of every single major religion or mystical teaching that has ever existed. It's letting go of this notion of judgment.
You know, I've heard it said, of course, and we all have, that, you know, this is a schoolhouse and we're here all here to learn. And it isn't about pass-fail.
That's right.
It's about experiencing, period.
That's right.
It's about experiencing and it's about waking up, waking up into the awareness of the love that we are and that other people are and learning to live our lives in harmony with that.
And I'm sure you come across people who are not awake, and there are some who don't want to wake up. They like being, if you will, asleep and just going through the motions, and because it's so much easier. In one of the programs, as I was sharing earlier, one of the comments that is often made throughout the weekend is that you're in the state of confusion, which is a wonderful state to be in. You know, there are no borders, there's no government, and you don't have to care about anything, and you don't have to take responsibility.
The truth of that is that, unfortunately, well, I shouldn't say unfortunately, because everyone has their own curriculum, but all those people are going to find themselves doing is recreating the same experiences in one form or another over and over and over again, because they're not learning from their experience.
And the thing, this work is not the easiest work. However, once you begin to engage in it, there is a kind of empowerment that people experience that is very uplifting in my experience, Richard.
You're not the victim anymore.
Exactly. And I actually came to this conclusion many years ago working for the Christian station, and I was hearing the stories back then in the 80s and early 90s, you know, the devil this and hell that and so on and so forth and hellfire and brimstone and, you know, you've got to be right or wrong. Two things I became aware of. Number one was the passage in the Bible that speaks to being perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. And I thought, well, wait a minute, logic would tell me that being perfect like God, the Father, well, God is neither right nor wrong, nor good nor bad. And I just kind of came to this conclusion. It's just being. That's what perfection is just being. Because that's what he or it or the universal power, whatever you want to call it, is. It just is.
That would be an accurate way of looking at it. At the same time, we're here for a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So if everybody all at once came into that same awareness that you're talking about, there really would not be a need for a creation anymore, because why leave heaven to go to heaven?
Well, that's a good point.
So this is serving a purpose that spirit knows, and we don't pretend to know. But one thing we do know that as people give up this business of judgment, this business of wrong-making, the quality of their life moves forward, and they experience greater lives or greater experiences of being in a place of loving more and more and more of the time. We know this experientially because our work with people is largely experiential. And we've seen hundreds, thousands, I would say, by this time, of people having these experiences where all of a sudden they find themselves in this place of loving, and it's transformational. I can't say, I doubt that anybody could go through this experience of letting go and not know the difference, and then declare right then and there, I got to do more of this in my life.
Well, and the way I understand that passage that you quoted, which is really a beautiful passage, in our frame of reference, the nature of God is love, and we as human beings are all part of God, and our essential nature is also love. And we have the opportunity to know our essential nature experientially here and now in the lifetime and in the embodiment that we're in. And, you know, there is a great deal of suffering on this planet. There is such a range of conscious awareness. There are people who are highly conscious and highly aware. There are people who are very engaged in the process of seeking and awakening and wanting to know who they are and why they're here. And the things that I love about the work that we've done is we found a way to invite people into the spiritual context and to provide them with simple, practical tools that they can use in their everyday lives that can assist them in transforming their lives and having a life of greater meaning and fulfillment. And for many people, it's just like, it's like turning on a light switch, literally, where all of a sudden they realize who they are and that they can get busy and clean up the judgments and some of the misunderstandings that they hold in their consciousness. This whole business of addressing the belief system, the conditioned beliefs that we have about who we are, about how life is, about what we can have and not have, about what we're capable of, all of those things can be extremely limiting, and by working with them and transforming them, there can be such a liberation.
One of our favorite quotes is from the Persian mystical poet Jalaluddin Rumi, who said, "Out beyond ideas of right doing and wrongdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there." And that's our intention, is to meet with as many people as are ready to make the transition into that way of living their lives. And we don't make people wrong who are not doing that. Everyone will do it as soon as they're ready.
Yeah, there is that as it is said, divine right timing, as it were.
Yes.
I remember a conversation I had with my brother. We were attending a family reunion out in rural Arizona, south of Phoenix, and we were walking outside I think it was an Elks Lodge. We were walking in the desert there, just chatting. You know, I was sharing with him some of the things that I had learned. I was 33 at the time, which is now going back some almost 25 years. And I was sharing all these things, and my brother, we stopped, and he looked at me and says, "Well, it's about time. My God, you're 33. To which I responded, "Mike, it's not when you get it, but that you get it.
That's right.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, and I'm so grateful as well, because, you know, he and I were beginning to sort of rekindle our friendship, our brotherhood, if you will. Not that we were necessarily estranged, but we just, you know, he was off in China for 4 years, and he's doing all that he's doing in his life with his family. I'm here doing things with my family and so forth. And we've never really stayed in touch. And quite honestly, we never had that real brother-brother relationship that a men in particular who have brothers, siblings, might have in terms of that closeness. Because we were only a year apart. We're only a year apart. And yet our paths were actually quite divergent, and he just had his own path that he wanted to go on.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and so it's been very interesting and gratifying. I want to get into this aspect of listening to the still small voice inside, and I want to share with you really fast here, because I want your input. The best science fiction example, and I don't even think that the creator intended it this way, but I observed it, and I'm going, gee, that's kind of like our our spiritual network is the character in the Star Trek Next Generation series, the Borg. And I've shared this many, many times on this program because they're all interconnected, yet they all have individual jobs that are different from one another. And yet they carry them out while listening to and following the directives of the still small voice. And you and I, the three of us, we're in essence the same way. If we're listening and if we're connected, we go off and we do what it is that we do, kind of like I shared about myself and my brother. And yet at the same time, we are working towards that big picture that we may never see, but if we're connected. Talk to us about that.
Well, you know, I love that you're bringing this up because from my point of view, this is one of the most wonderful opportunities that awakening really offers to people, is the opportunity to become aware of the voice of spirit, of higher guidance inside of them, of their intuition, of their direct knowing. And it's like shifting to an entirely different operating system, the operating system that is installed within us is the operating system of the ego, which is revolves around limitation and restriction, comfort, control, over-responsibility, a variety of ego patterns. But when we can slow down and we can spend time in the silence and we can learn to listen with the ears of love to the voice of love, the information that is available to us and the higher guidance that is available to us can assist us in so many ways in our everyday lives. We're not alone, and we're not on our own.
We have a way of talking about this. People who are clairvoyant can see into the future. They may see things that are coming, but they have a difficult time with the timeline because they all seem right after each other. And so maybe they look at dress and they guess based on that. But we say, let's assume that's accurate. That would mean that events are stacked up waiting to come into the present reality. And we say, and consider the possibility that there are spiritual allies who are in charge of bringing these events in one at a time, according to whatever their timeline is. And so, operationally, we call these the stackers.
Hmm.
So, here you are, you're driving on the highway, and somebody cuts you off. And you start cursing those people, and or you have a flat tire and you have to pull off the side of the road and you get very upset and you're going to miss your meeting and you're just really upset. Well, the stackers are watching how you respond in that situation. And they look at each other and they very lovingly say, gosh, looks like he's not getting that. We better stack up 10 more similar events. or you have your flat tire, you pull off the side of the road and you go, well, gosh, had a flat tire. Nothing I can do about that except call AAA or, you know, get on the phone and get a tow truck here and get me fixed up. And in the meantime, since I'm sitting here, maybe I'll read a book that I have. Well, maybe I'll just send loving energy to all the other people driving on the highway because this is not easy to go to work every day this way. The stackers look at each other. And they say, wow, looks like he's really getting it. Take off 10. So this is what is meant when we say we create our future by how we respond now.
Yeah. You know, we use the phrase giving you choices and knowledge of those choices. And it sounds kind of strange, but the reality is, and I use this analogy, that we just don't know what we don't know. You're traveling along this roadway. You've been doing this for years. Your family and everyone, your society says, here's what you do because the fog is so thick. Just stay on the right side of the road. Follow the little white, follow the white shoulder line and you'll be fine. Everything's okay. And that's the way it is. And then one day the fog lifts and you see a fork in the road. And all of the sudden you realize, I wonder if I went that way, what would I find?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, now that's based upon whether or not you're adventurous enough, you're curious enough,
that's right,
and so on and so forth. And so what we're trying to do is share with people that, that those different perspectives. And so I want to throw into the mix, and this is the beauty of, I love the diversity of guests that we found in this program because of their different points of view. I'm curious if either of you has, because Mary, I think you made reference to past lives and so forth, and maybe you did also, Ron. There's also a school of thought from an institute, the Newton Institute, dealing with LBL, Life Between Lives. And that when we die, we don't immediately reincarnate, that we go to this other place in spirit where we get a chance to rest, we get a chance to sort of maybe debrief, and then calculate or figure out, okay, well, what do I want to do next in the next life? There are people, there are entities, if you will, or essences, there are people who, I said people again, who are there to assist, to support, to encourage, and so on and so forth. And then you make your decision and you fill out your contract and you sign it and you're off again. And at the same time, you have made this choice as the driver of the new vehicle. And I've always used that analogy that how many different cars have you had in your lifetime, in this lifetime? Mm-hmm. Well, the soul, the essence that animates the body you're in now, basically is the same thing. The body is just a vehicle. And you're going to change to another one, maybe a better one, maybe not so good. Maybe you'll get a beater as opposed to a BMW. But some people even would say, well, yeah, but where's free will? And you know, now you're talking about predestination because you've filled out this contract and now you're locked in and there's no way of changing it. I mean, it's irrevocable and so on and so forth. When in fact, all of that is not true, that in spite of the fact that you fill out this contract, it's yours. You, in essence, you made it with yourself and you can modify it at any point along the way. As you, I think, rightly described, Ron, this whole business of the stackers saying, add 10, take away 10, depending upon, you know, how you are getting it, as it were. Are you familiar, first of all, with that whole concept of LBL? And how does that work into the mix of what we're discussing here?
I am familiar with the concept. And in a way, it doesn't really matter what that process is, because all we know who are alive today that we're dealing with what we're dealing with. I'll give you an example. In my early training, my first teacher was someone who did karmic life readings, and she was very clairvoyant. And we were walking to a hospital one day to visit one of the people that she worked with, and coming toward us is a young man who is in a wheelchair, and I don't know, maybe he was 16, 17, 18, something like that, and all contorted, and didn't have control over his limbs, and we've all seen people like that. And they were, you know, we're walking toward them, they're walking toward us, and we pass. And my teacher turned to me, and she said, you know, Ron, you really don't need to feel sorry for that young man. See, she was reading my aura.
Mm.
You don't really need to feel sorry for that young man. The truth of the matter is that this is his last lifetime, and he will complete his time on this earth school by simply enduring. And he is aware of this, and he is deliriously happy because he knows that this is the end of it for him on this particular school, and he will graduate. Mm-hmm. Now, does it really matter what the process was that where he set that up, and is it free will, is it free choice? I don't get in conversations like that, because to me, it doesn't really matter, because what matters is here we are now. And we have choices that we make every single moment of every single day, every one of which affects our completion of our spiritual agenda in this lifetime. And so that's all we focus on.
Mm. And you know, it's interesting. I just remember talking with someone the other day, and they made the comment to me that, hey, it's all in the script. And I'm going, wait a minute. It's all in the script? If that were true, and I don't know that it isn't, but if that were true, then it completely negates that inner feeling I have that my life has meaning.
That's right.
And if it's a script and I knew it, well, then that's in the script too. There's sort of a paradox there. And my life has no meaning, so I can then, based upon the script, I can go out and rape and pillage and plunder because it doesn't matter. It's just in the script.
That's right.
And I can't deviate from it, so, you know, I mean, it just raises so many other questions.
See, in that way of thinking, there's no choice. There's
yeah.
no free choice.
Yeah.
If there's no free choice, there's no point to the whole thing.
Let me ask you, both of you, Mary and Ron, and by the way, let me go back and let our listeners know we are talking to Mary and Ron Hulnick, PhD. They are the co-facilitators, the founders of the University of Santa Monica. And boy, you know, I wish we had a pneumatic tube that I could just shoot down there and, you know, in seconds and take some courses and then shoot back to Santa Barbara. Or maybe you could come up here and we could do some homeschooling because we could all use some help here. But in terms of this whole aspect of remembering, now you have touched upon it throughout the program, but can we maybe knock down one or two steps? Obviously, step one is I want to change my life. I want something more. I want to wake up. I want to have a more fulfilling life, blah, 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 blah. They contact the University of Santa Monica. They get in touch with you folks or the facilitators or the administration, what have you. Say, this is what I want. Now what do I do?
Well, what you would do is you would register. We have our basic program goes on for 10 months. And it goes on that for one weekend a month, and it goes on that way for a very specific reason, because it is so easy to come in and take a weekend course, and then 6 weeks later you forgot what was there. And so by doing it over and over and over and over and entering into that same community of like-hearted and like-minded beings, everyone supports each other, and we establish and make good on, let's call it, what we refer to as clear, positive intentions. Someone who wants to grow, really, and wants to awaken, nothing's going to stop them, but they have to find a vehicle. There are very few people on the planet, and there have been them, but very few that all of a sudden they just wake up into full conscious awareness. That's very, very, very rare.
Mm-hmm.
Most people have to work at it. And it's a work that goes on for a lifetime.
Indeed. I'm curious individually. Mary,
yes.
How did this start for you? For me, as I said in the last segment, my search, I'll call it my official search, began at the age of 17 with my primer, metaphysical primer autobiography of a yogi.
Yeah.
How about you, Mary?
Well, I think as a child, I was just already very involved inside myself in those deeper questions of who am I, why am I here, what's really going on here, and there was just a natural progression in terms of the kinds of books I read, the quality of conversations that I was having with people. And I wanted to do something that would make a difference. And so being very, very interested in people and having a compassionate heart, I prepared myself as a licensed psychologist and as a marriage and family counselor. But the spiritual element was always very, very important to me, and just the deeper mysteries of our nature. And so I would just say it was a natural progression because I came in with that predisposition.
Mm. Ron, how about you?
Well, I was more interested in things like ESP and extraterrestrials and things of that nature. But for me, like yourself, Autobiography of a Yogi was a seminal book. I mean, wow, that was an eye-opener, as was Be Here Now, Ram Dass's book.
Mm-hmm, I read that.
Yeah. And the ESP thing and the extraterrestrial thing is what brought me into New Mexico, where I met this teacher I referenced earlier. And that really, you know, I mean, she just knew way, way, way too much without having any knowledge than she should have known. And I just was drawn to that because I knew that she was coming from some other place, and it was that place that I was interested in. And, you know, and eventually I just left all of my life in New York and went back out to New Mexico and spent 5 years just day in and day out in that kind of a practice.
I find that it is so fascinating when we start comparing stories, as it were, of our experiences in this lifetime. And we, even though they might be somewhat divergent, they're really, you know, in essence, they're really kind of all the same.
Yeah.
In that, you know, we're all trying to learn pretty much the same lessons. It's one of the funny things that I observed, especially in the circles that I associated with back in Phoenix, from, you know, very early age. Especially with the intuitives. People would go to these intuitives and ask them questions, and they were the same questions. And sometimes, well, and even with the religious radio station, when they had these programs where they would ask people to call in for prayer, for intercessory prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And I recognized the voices, and week in, week out for years, I was there for 15 years, it was the same request. And I'm thinking, what's going on? Why aren't these people... And then it kind of dawned on me. I thought, okay, one of the reasons might be they're just looking for a connection.
Yeah.
They're looking for community, and this is really all that they have right now. And in terms of their prayers being answered, I don't have an answer for that. I don't know why they don't think that it's being answered. I remember once the whole aspect of praying for healing and then, you know, don't acknowledge that you're, you know, that you have a disease, what have you. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. If you don't acknowledge that you have a disease, then why are you calling asking for prayer for healing? You know, now this was the ministers who were saying these things. And I was going, you can't ask for something you are denying exists. You know, it's one thing to say I am whole, you know, and so forth. But it's another thing to say, I have a pain in my wrist and I need prayer. Well, don't acknowledge that there's pain in your wrist. Well, then why am I calling you?
Yeah, no, it makes perfectly good sense.
And I have to say, too, that in my experiences, I have asked those questions over the years that have gotten me into a lot of trouble, to the extent that I was even told that I should just go read the writings of the founding fathers of the faith, in this case, Christianity, because they were asking the same questions. And two questions then came up. Wait a minute, who set them up as the arbiters of the faith? And two, if I'm asking these questions and I don't know who these guys are, and they were all guys to start with, if that's the case, then I must be in the same class as them. And again, I'm not thinking egotistically, I'm just thinking logically. That stands to reason. Well, that I must be right up there with them because I'm asking those same questions. I don't have the answers. That's what I'm looking for. So I know that we're all doing that. And I know that your book is one place where we can at least get some guidance in your university, the University of Santa Monica. But I'm curious, before we wrap up the program, maybe we can answer that question a little, or at least touch on some kind of an answer as to where do we get these answers? Do we constantly seek out various writings or individuals looking for a guru or a sage or someone? Or do we just stop and sit still and listen?
Well, see, this to us is what you're bringing up now is of crucial importance, because what we have, I would have to say, stumbled upon, because I wouldn't presume to take credit for it. Or you could say it was divinely inspired if one wanted to, any of those things. But what we have found is a method that converges spirituality with what has been psychology in the past. That's why we call it spiritual psychology. See, if we remember, we're living in two worlds. So if you have a pain in your wrist, the reality in this world is you have a pain in your wrist. What you do with that pain, how you hold that pain, what you make of that pain, and then eventually how you use that pain or don't use that pain has a great deal to do, first and foremost, with your own spiritual evolution, and secondly, it has an effect on the pain. So if I have a pain, you know, if my wrist is broken, I'm not going to the first church. I'm going to my orthopedist as quickly as I can get there.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean I don't want prayer and I don't want people to be sending me spiritual energy for healing. It doesn't mean that. But it also means I'm going to be going within myself and asking myself, whoever is in pain in there, can you talk to me? Can you tell me what that's all about for you? Can you explain to me why we had to have this particular situation occur so that we could get what's the learning that I can go for here so I can use the experience for maximum value in terms of my spiritual evolution? So it's not an either-or question, it's an and.
You know, the other, I'd like to respond to this, too.
Please,
because
please.
The question about teachers, I think, is a very, very important teacher, a very important question. Ron and I were very privileged to study with a living master for over 35 years and someone of extremely high consciousness. And knowing him in the ways that we did for as long as we did, he really walked his talk. He was really the presence of love. His ability to bring forward spiritual wisdom was unparalleled to anything that I have heard or seen in this world at this time. And so if one has the good fortune to discover a spiritual master, that is a great blessing. But the danger is that one can become, they can place the guru or the master on a pedestal rather than recognizing it as an opportunity to awaken to the spiritual master within. And one of the tools that we teach is a process of inner dialogue with one's inner counselor that resides at the deeper authentic self or soul level. So the wisdom is available within. The challenge that all of us have in embodiment is that we also have the ego who will attempt to distort information or even delete parts of information to maintain our comfort zone and to... what shall I say, fulfill the ego's need to feel powerful and in control. So can be a slippery slope for people.
Well, now, I've raised this scenario regarding the still small voice, that it will never, ever, ever hurt you. It may take you into challenging situations to help you learn your lessons, but it will never harm you. Now,
that's right.
I said this to someone who said, challenged me on my premise, how can you be sure that it is the voice of God and not those little voices in there telling you to go out and rape, plunge, and pillage, etc., etc.?
See, if you're until you have what I would call spiritual experiences, it is impossible to really know the difference. This is one of the main challenges you have. This is why it's very challenging, because there is so much hype going on in the world right now, because people have realized that they can take spiritual sounding things and market them to produce results in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And spirituality was never designed to produce results in the world. It was designed so that people could awaken into the essence of what and who they truly are.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't really... how can I say this? It's very difficult to know in advance the results that you're going to bring forward when you do something, because it's, how can I say this? We talk about when somebody truly surrenders and their prayer becomes like Meister Eckhart would say, if the only prayer you ever said was thank you, that would be enough.
Mm.
So like every night before I go to sleep, that's what I do. I say, Lord, thank you for this day. You know, if you want me to do more, please wake me up in the morning.
I like that.
Yeah. And see, so we say to people, if you really surrender, then you look at the things that are coming forward, and you move into a state that outside of the comfort zone that we refer to as the divine unknowing. When you trust, you move forward in what seems like the best direction at any given time, but your prayer is, Lord, I am moving forward in this direction for your highest good and my highest good and the highest good of all concerned as best as I know it. And if you have a better way, please, I'm willing to do it your way. Mm. And a lot of people find that challenging, because they don't want to do it your way. They want to do it their way. And anytime you want to do something their way or your way, you know right away you're in ego consciousness.
I have often, and I'm grateful for this as well, as far as the universe is concerned, that anytime, and I'm thankful I haven't been there often, but anytime that I've started to think more highly of myself than I should, the universe seems to send, the stackers seem to put in front of me a challenge that does nothing short of humble me.
That's right.
And it's like, oh, sorry. Thank you. and again, as you say, even if it was just a prayer of thank you, it used to be when people would pay me a compliment for whatever project I had done for them and so forth, aside from the monetary remunerations, I would say, well, thanks, I did that, 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 that. I just went into this long explanation of how it went and this and that.
Right.
And one day, I don't know exactly what the incident was, but one day I finally came to the realization, you know, really, all you have to say when you receive something like that is, thank you.
Yeah.
That's all you don't say any more.
Yes.
One time we were having a conversation with the teacher that Mary referred to, and, you know, it's not a secret. His name was John Roger,
mm-hmm.
and he died about 2.5 years ago. And, you know, he'd been teaching for, 30, 40 years, something like that.
Maybe close to 50, Ron.
Yeah. But we went to him one day, and we were having a conversation. We said, you know, it's a little challenging. At the end of these classes and workshops, people stand up and they applaud and, you know, and it's very hard to take that in because we know we're not doing it.
Mm.
And he said, well, he said, it's very true that you're not doing it. It's being done through you. And then he said, but you did prepare the vehicle.
There you go.
And he said, so just take credit for having prepared the vehicle and then just give all the rest of it over to Spirit.
Right.
And that's what we've done ever since.
Well, and that's excellent advice as well. And it's, to me, just it's an extraordinary opportunity for us as individuals, as souls riding around in this vehicle, looking out through the eyes and listening mm-hmm. through the ears and so forth, to experience this world. I have to tell you that as a child, I had an experience where I was looking through these eyes of mine, as bad as they were at the time. And the thought was, I'm inside this head, inside this body, this vehicle, looking out at the rest of the world and all of these other beings, siblings, parents, friends, family, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm wondering if they feel the same way as I do, that they're looking, they actually feel as though they're looking out through the eyes. That the eyes aren't really seeing, and it's literally you're looking through the windshield of your car.
Yeah.
I mean, this was the mindset that I had. I think it must have been 8 or 9 years old.
Yeah. Well, you came in with that degree of knowing.
Yeah. And that we can change that vehicle. And by the way, you talk about maintaining, be taking credit for maintaining the vehicle. That's why I make sure that I change the oil on the Volvo every 5,000 miles and do those kinds of things, because I would like to get it to 200,000 miles and still running like a top, I hope.
That's right.
And so I try to do the same thing with the body as well and take care of it, you know, in spite of, obviously, as we age and in this world, the way that the physical body goes through those changes as it ages. But there are ways in which we can, you know, foster better health and so on and so forth.
Absolutely.
Ron and Mary, I can't tell you how delightful this has been. Wonderful to have you on the program. And I also would like, especially because you're so darn close, should you ever find yourselves in the Santa Barbara area, we would love to have you back in studio to have this conversation face to face.
Wonderful. Well, we would love that, Richard.
And then before I let you go, I want to remind our listeners, again, the title of the book is Remembering the Light Within, a Course in Soul-Centered Living, and then the websites. There are two of them, and we'll put both of them up on the site, universityofsantamonica.edu and then usmonline.org. So you can get further information about Mary and Ron Hulnick, and we will encourage you to do that and to check out this work and much else, much of what they are also doing. Now, when I have two guests on the program at the same time, one of them has an advantage to what I'm about to do over the other. I have three final questions to ask of each of you, and I'm going to alternate. So, Ron, I'm going to start with you. Who is Ron Hulnick?
Ron Hulnick is a divine being using a human experience to learn and grow.
And Mary? Who is Mary Hulnick?
I would say the same thing, Richard.
Okay.
I'm a divine being. I'm the presence of love. I am God incarnate. And I'm using my embodiment as an opportunity to learn, grow, and to be of service.
And Mary, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve with the work that you are doing now?
Well, to touch the hearts of as many people as possible in ways that support them in their waking up into the awareness that they are love, and improving the quality of their life here in the physical level.
And Ron, what about you? What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I perceive that what my life is about is assisting people in waking up, because this is a very, very, very important time in the history of human evolution. And there are those of us who are here to assist the new souls that are coming forward, who are the ones who are really going to be the way showers as we go into the new dispensation that we're moving into.
And my final question, I will start with you, Ron. What is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose is to be the most, I have to say, loving vehicle that I can be. And that refers back to so that I can fulfill that which I came to do.
And Mary, what is your life's purpose?
Well, my life's purpose is to awaken into the full awareness of myself as the presence of love, as the presence of the divine, and to be of service to spirit, to assist in the greater awakening that's taking place on the planet at this time.
I want to again thank both of you for joining us on the program, and we look forward to that wonderful visit one day where either I will come down to the Los Angeles area to Santa Monica, and maybe I'll bring my little digital recorder and we'll do a face-to-face, which would be very, very fine too. Or you folks will come on up to the Oceanside, a wonderful little resort of Santa Barbara, and we will continue this conversation, because literally, as with many of these, we could literally go on for hours.
Yes.
Again, thank you so much for joining us here on the program.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Richard.
A pleasure.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.